Now we're in the week two of this series called Wise Up. We're unpacking the book of Proverbs together. And today I want to talk to you about getting direction, finding direction in your life. And to start off, I want to ask, any of you men ever had trouble with directions? That's what I thought. Very few of you are honest this morning. And several of you ladies were wanting to raise your husband's hand for them. Not a lot of men. I thought about asking you ladies, but from that video, I think we might know the answer. Just kidding. I'm kidding. Come on. Getting lost is equal to everyone. I mean, myself, case in point, I'm a fairly intelligent guy. I did very well in school. I am pretty handy. I can fix a lot of stuff. I have a master's degree. I mean, direction should not be a problem for me. And yet, if you would choose to drive with me anywhere or talk with my wife, you'll find very quickly, I get lost a lot. I grew up in a small town in Kansas, and you didn't have to have great directions. I mean, it was kind of like, well, they live over there, so you went over there. That was about it. You didn't have to take three turns, this way or that, or drive 20 miles. It was right there. I went to Missouri for school, a small town there. I lived in Mexico City for a time, and now I'm here in Grand Junction. But there's something about me. I have taken a lot of questionable routes to get to the destination that I was trying to through the years. Now, this can be a big deal in my marriage. I can be driving and lost, and my wife Dana, she's actually pretty good with directions. And so I'm driving along. I know this has never happened to you, but I'm driving along, and my wife is over here just kind of, you know, feeding me help. And it's kind of like, I don't do that. But anyway, why I don't let her drive, I don't know. Maybe I'm not as intelligent as I think. But then I was introduced to what I thought was perhaps one of the greatest marriage enhancement tools of all time, the GPS. This is my GPS unit. I actually rarely use this anymore because of my smartphone. And, you know, many of you who have that, you can use your phone these days. But when I first got a GPS, I believe it increased the marital happiness in my relationship by 30, 40, 50%, maybe even more. But here's the upside of my directionally challenged background. I can speak confidently and from authority when it comes to getting lost. And here's what I want those of you who don't get lost very often to know about those of us who do. We don't do it on purpose. We don't. We have the best of intentions. We have a pure heart. We have pure motives. We're trying very desperately to get where we want to go. I mean, when I'm headed somewhere, I have a clear picture on the destination that I'm trying to get to. But when it comes to directions, there's a big difference between our intentions and the actual direction we're headed, right? I mean, you get this. Follow with me for just a moment. Let's say you have a family and kids, okay? And so you decide that, hey, this year, we're going to Disneyland. And so you talk to the kids about it. You know, you don't surprise them on the day of. Who does that? Anyway, I know people who do. It was exciting. But, you know, you get them all built up and pumped up, and you talk about it. We're going to Disneyland. You've been talking about this for months. And then the day comes, and you get in the car, and you head up towards I-70. And if you turn east on I-70, it doesn't matter what your intentions are. You're not headed to California. You're headed to Rifle, Glenwood, Denver, and eventually that flat pancake of a state called Kansas, where I'm from, right? And last time I checked, Mickey Mouse does not live in Kansas. No. And you're thinking, well, Seth, that's not rocket science. I know that. But somehow, we understand that when it comes to directions and geography, but we don't always, you know, metabolize that when it comes to life, when it comes to the direction we're headed in life. It's a principle that Andy Stanley, a pastor in Atlanta, Georgia, calls the principle of the path. And here's what he says. Direction, not intention, determines our destination. Whatever path you're on, whatever direction you're headed, it leads exactly where you're going to end up. And your intentions don't really matter at all. Now, my experience, my observation is that we have a tendency at times as humans to pick paths that don't always lead in the way or in the form that we actually want to end up. And I sit down. I'm hearing a lot of echo. Anybody else? Okay, all right. Erling will figure it out. So, anyway, it doesn't matter your intentions. If I sit down with people all the time who they've kind of gotten lost. And figuratively, they're headed off to Kansas. They may want to be going to California, but they're headed on their way in the wrong direction. And maybe it's relationally, maybe it's in their marriage, maybe it's in their finances, maybe it's with their kids or their career, or spiritually or morally, they've just gotten lost. And invariably, the conversation will turn into something like this. They'll say, I just don't understand how I got here. How did it get this bad? And as I'm listening to them, I'm thinking, well, I'm really not all that surprised. This is the path that you chose. And most of the time, it's heartbreaking to me that people don't connect the dots between the choices that they make and the outcomes they experience. And so many times, it's because we lean hard into our intentions. And we think, well, you know, as long as I try hard enough, as long as I work hard enough, I'll get where I want to be. This is not an education issue. How many of you know someone very, very smart and intelligent who makes poor decisions? Anybody? A few of you? Yes? Anybody, is that maybe you? I mean, we fool ourselves all the time. We think, well, as long as my heart is right, whatever that means. And as long as I try my best or work my hardest, I'll end up in the right place in life. But that's not the case, friends, because direction, not intention, determines our destination. And you see this play out all the time around you. Maybe there's a single girl who says, you know, I just wish I could meet a godly man who will treat me with respect and who will lead our family in a godly direction, not like those losers I've dated before. And then somehow she will continue to date people who, men who just, it doesn't matter, regardless of if they're a Christian or not, anyone who gives her attention. Or maybe you know a married man who would say, I want to have a great, intimate life with my wife. And yet they're exploring other things that is taking them away from intimacy with their life. Or maybe you know a married couple who would say, well, we want to get financially stable, be debt-free someday. And yet they live way outside their means. They don't have a budget, and they're constantly making decisions that take them further and further into debt. Or maybe you know a married woman who would say, I want a great relationship with my husband. And yet she prioritizes the kids over him all the time. Whatever it may be, there are so many examples in life of the disconnect between the choices that we make and the destination that we end up in. Here's my prediction. As I was going through this list, I bet someone popped into your mind as I mentioned those. I know it's happened to me. I mean, as I was kind of forming those, people are kind of popping into my mind. I know someone that fits that description. Here's the thing. Here's the problem. We judge others based on their actual path. We judge ourselves based on our intentions. Isn't that true? And we judge others based on their path. We judge ourselves on our intentions because we know our heart, right? We know that my intentions are good. So I have a tendency to disregard the actual path I'm on, thinking, well, I'm doing this with the right motives. But we can very quickly point out and understand when someone else falls off the path. So here's what I want to do as we unpack this today. I want to challenge you to do something that goes against what I normally talk about. I want you to think only of yourself this morning, okay? Normally, I would tell you, put others first, right? Think about others. But for our purposes today, talking about staying on the right path, think only about you today. And to help you do that, I want you to pick an area of your life. Pick an area of your life where you hope that you're on the right path. Maybe it's relational. You're single, and you're hoping that you're on the right path to meet Mr. or Mrs. Wright. Maybe for you it's in your marriage, and you're married and happy, but you want your marriage to go the distance, to have a happy marriage. Maybe you're a parent, and you're thinking, well, I want my kids to grow up and be godly, successful people. I want to launch them well. Maybe it's in your career, or you hope to one day be debt-free and have enough money that you don't have to fight about it. It's not a stress in your home any longer. Whatever that may be, I want you to choose an area of your life and just kind of focus in on that for our time together. I want that to be squarely lodged into your mind for this morning. Because here's what I want you to know. You are already on a path in that area of your life. You're already headed in a direction in that area in your life. And that direction, that path, is either leading you towards or away from where you want to be. So how do you know you're headed in the right direction? Fortunately for us, Solomon has so much to say in the book of Proverbs about getting on and staying on the right path. He uses the word path, or an equivalent of it, 31 times in the book of Proverbs. There's 31 chapters in Proverbs. So an average of one time per chapter, Solomon talks about this concept of getting on and staying on the right path. In fact, I hope, if you were here last week, that you've been reading through a chapter of Proverbs that corresponds with the date of the month. Because that was my challenge last week. The next couple months here, read a chapter every day that corresponds with the date. So today is the 19th, right? The 19th. Read Proverbs chapter 19 today. Proverbs chapter 20 tomorrow. And that way, no matter where you're at, what you're doing, you can easily know which chapter to read as we study this book together. But here's the thing. Do you know what your problem is? Here's the problem that we all struggle with. It is almost impossible to stay on the right path on our own. Here's what Solomon says in Proverbs chapter 4, verses 26 and 27. Give careful thought to the paths for your feet and be steadfast in all your ways. Do not turn to the right or the left. Keep your foot from evil. Solomon doesn't say anything about our intentions or our thoughts. He says, pay attention to the direction that you're actually headed. You're not going to end up on the path on your own. Be careful about it. You have to understand that. Here's a place where Solomon makes this very clear. Proverbs chapter 14, verse 12. The first part of the verse says this. There is a way that appears to be right. Happens a lot in life, doesn't it? That looks right. 24 months, 0% interest. That's great. Sign me up. Or, she is so pretty. Or, he has so much money. Or, we really need that bigger house because we want to be the place that people hang out. Or, how can something that feels so good be wrong? Lots of things look good in life. But what does the second half of the verse say? But in the end, it leads to death. Many things, there is a way that appears to be right, but in the end, it leads to death. So why are there so many paths before us that seem right but don't end up leading us to the place that we want to be? Here's why. Most of us are pursuing happiness, not truth. And we're very good at convincing ourselves very quickly to go down a path that we think is going to lead us to where we want to be. I mean, it happens all the time. You've been there before, you'll be there again. This doesn't go away with age, by the way. You'll continue to be able to convince yourself of things. Here's what the prophet Jeremiah says in Jeremiah chapter 17, verse 9. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? I mean, who really knows how bad your heart is or how bad my heart is? Did you know this? Your heart will deceive you. Your emotions will lead you down the wrong path. You can't trust you. You're the best salesman who's ever sold you anything, right? We sell ourselves on some pretty bad paths, and here's the double whammy. Even if you have the best and purest of hearts and are looking for the right path, it's still hard to find the right path because it's not like everybody's doing it. In fact, this is what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7, the Sermon on the Mount, verses 13 and 14. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. So how can we, at Northeast Christian Church, how can we be part of the few that stay on the right path that leads to life? Well, I'm glad you asked, because Solomon has several things to say about finding that path and staying on the path. And I want to unpack something that he talks about in Proverbs. Here is God's solution for finding the right path and staying on the right path. I have to seek advice and accept correction on my direction. In fact, I want us all to say that together this morning. Can we do that? I have to seek advice and accept correction on my direction. Two verses I want to show you on advice, and two verses I want to show you on correction to kind of work through here in a few moments. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 15. The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice. Wise people seek out and listen to advice. How about this one? Proverbs 15, verse 22. Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors they succeed. When you have advisors around you and you listen to their counsel, your plans have a higher success rate. Here's a few verses on correction. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 17. Whoever heeds discipline shows the way to life, But whoever ignores correction leads others astray. Or this one also on correction, Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, but whoever hates correction is stupid. Now, I don't like that word. We try not to use that word in our home. As you can imagine, we have young kids there, and them using it just wouldn't be good. But that's the word used in the NIV this morning. Before we unpack what Solomon says about advice and correction, I want to ask you, is all the advice and correction coming toward you equal? Is all the advice and correction coming towards you equal? Of course not. Not even close. You have to be so selective about who you seek advice from and who you accept correction from. I want to do an experiment this morning. So everybody stand up real quick. This won't take long, I promise. But please stand up. Now, ever so subtly, but very clearly, after you close your eyes, in fact, go ahead and close your eyes now, okay? And remember, God is watching. Please close your eyes. No cheating. I want you to do this and keep doing this until I ask you to open your eyes. But I want you to point in the direction of Disneyland right now. Go ahead. Point in the direction of Disneyland. Okay? All right. No changing, you know, first reactions. Okay, now open your eyes. Okay. We got fingers going this way. We got fingers going that way. Some are going that way. You can go ahead and be seated, okay? And this is an intelligent crowd. Might be one of the most intelligent crowds gathered together in all of Grand Junction this morning, right? And yet, if we were, you know, families are coming to us. How do you get to Disneyland? And we're sending them to Kansas, and Canada, Mexico. And I mean, you get my point. We have to be so selective in who we choose to seek advice from and accept correction from. And here's two criteria for if you're going to seek advice or accept correction from someone. First of all, they need to be godly. And second of all, they need to be experienced. And I want to kind of explain this, at least how it plays out in my life. I do not seek advice, counsel, from anyone who is not godly, who does not use this book as a guide for their life. If this is going to be the guide for my life, why would I accept counsel or input advice from someone who doesn't also use this book for their life? So the people that I approach are godly people. I'm not going to accept advice or correction from people who are not godly people. Proverbs, Solomon says this in chapter 10, verse 31. From the mouth of the righteous, or some versions might say godly, from the mouth of the righteous comes the fruit of wisdom. Godly people give wisdom, give good advice, give good counsel, will give good correction. Over and over and over again, Proverbs, Solomon talks about saying it's the godly who give good advice. Don't seek out someone who is not a godly individual, who doesn't follow Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, who's not a mature believer. Don't seek them out for advice. The second word is experienced. You have to find people who are further down the path than you are to where you want to go. Find those people and seek counsel from them. Seek advice from them. Again, I can explain how this works in my life. Through the years, I've had different mentors in my life based on what area I want to grow in. And so if I want to grow in my career or my marriage or parenting or finances or something, I may seek someone out and ask them, hey, could I spend time with you from time to time over the next several months or this year? Now, I do not dominate their time, okay? It's not like, hey, could we hang out every day for an hour because I need that? No. But maybe monthly, I'll buy them lunch, or quarterly, I'll buy them lunch and just ask their advice, ask their input to speak into my life. My wife, Dana, and I, we love it when we have opportunity to visit with married couples who are further down the road than we are. We've been married 16 years. And when we walk away from a conversation with somebody who's maybe invited us over to their home or out, or we've carved out time and had them over to our home, and you know, they've been married 30, 40, 50 years, we walk away thinking, man, that was so encouraging to hear. I mean, how did you make it work? How did you do this? How are you successful? And so no matter where you are in life, what season you're in or what area you're in, your career, your finances, your marriage, parenting, school, whatever it may be, you need people in your life who are farther down the road who you can seek advice from, who are more experienced, who you can glean counsel from. You'll never stop needing that. Now you might ask yourself, well, where do I find godly people, godly experienced people in my life? A lot of you have it right now. You may not realize it, But that's one of the reasons we encourage you here at the church to get connected. You're not going to get connected on social media. You ask for counsel all the time, right? You type it up, click. You get 50 or 100 responses, some of you, all different directions, right, on what to do. That's not connected. You need to get connected with people who are godly and experienced. And so we encourage people to get into a small group or get into a Bible study or be with people in the church regularly so that you can ask them for advice and give them advice as well. I enjoy being in our small group. Now, we're all kind of the same generation. And there's another one that's very similar. So, you know, we're all in the same season of life. We got kids, we're married, that sort of thing. Sometimes it's awesome. Sometimes it's, you know, the blind leading the blind, right? As we try and figure these things out. I think the most powerful groups are those who are multi-generational. Because then you have people that, and if you're in my small group, I didn't mean that to offend you. I mean, we're all in this together. But the multi-generational ones, I think, are the most powerful because you have people who are clearly further down the road who can pour into your life. You can ask for wisdom and insight from. But too many times I see people only asking their peers for advice. Sometimes your peers can give good advice. But be careful asking and seeking counsel from people who are not where you want to go. They may care about you. They may love you. But if they're not where you want to be, why would you ask them for their counsel? We have to be so selective in who we ask advice from. People further down, godly people. This is what I recognize about successful people. Successful people seem to be always willing to reach out and ask godly, experienced people for advice. They're never afraid of that. They're never too prideful or too arrogant or whatever that may be. We've got to be willing to humble ourselves. We don't always know all the answers, do we? I think sometimes we feel like, well, I have this title, and so I'm supposed to know the answers. I have a child born into our family, so now I have the title parent. I'm all of a sudden supposed to know everything about parenting? Of course not. We've got to be willing to approach people and ask for their input. Or maybe as a grandparent. I mean, just because you have a title does not make you a great individual at that. When I said, I do, I was given the title husband, right? I was 20 years and I'm 21 by a month. I turned 21 a month before we got married. Did you know that the human brain does not fully develop until you're 25? Maybe insurance companies are a little bit farther ahead than we are because there's some kind of price break at 25, right? You're now mature enough to drive a motor vehicle. But I want to ask advice from people that are further down the road. You may be a CEO or a business owner or a school teacher. Whatever that title is does not automatically make you the most intelligent person in the room. We've got to find a way to seek advice from other people. Solomon, wisest man who ever lived, he was the go-to man for everything, and yet he had more to write about seeking direction than any other biblical author. Think about that for just a moment. Talks about it all the time. In fact, here's what I would encourage you. As you read through Proverbs over this next month and a half or so, anytime you come to the word advice or counsel or correction or discipline, I want you to just maybe consider highlighting that or underlining that. If you do that, you will underline some 40 different verses. And as I'm studying for this and kind of unpacking this, here's something I recognize. He talks about correction and discipline three times as often as he does advice and counsel. You might be thinking, well, it's probably just a coincidence. I think not. And here's, well, I'll flesh it out in just a minute. But here's what we need to know about advice and discipline, counsel and correction. Advice is generally sought by you, right? You go to someone and you seek out advice. You ask for advice. But correction is normally given by others. I'll explain. Siri, can you give me directions to City Market on 12th Street? That's seeking out advice, right? A few moments later, if something has gone wrong, I probably hear recalculating. Please make a U-turn, right? That's correction. Here's another example. I am really out of shape. I am eating horribly. I'm probably not going to make it to 60. I need some help. And so I go to someone in my life who's experiened in that area, and I say, hey, could you help me out here? I could really use some counsel in this area. Correction, on the other hand, is you're not thinking about any of that, and all of a sudden a caring, loving, godly, experienced person, they would have to be to pull this off, comes along and says, hey, you are really out of shape. And, I mean, you're eating terribly, and you're probably not going to make it to 60. And it's like, well, we're talking about the same two topics, or the same topic by two different situations here, right? But one is more painful. One kind of stings a bit. You might be thinking, well, no one would ever do that. Actually, I have had someone do that to me. About 7 years ago, had a member of our board with the mission group, and he messaged me one, sent me a called me, and I didn't take his call one Monday morning. And he said, hey, Seth, this is Greg. This afternoon at 4 p.m., he was a school teacher. I'm going to start working out in my basement. You're welcome to join me if you want. I'm going to work out every day, 4 o'clock. He called me back at 1, and he said, hey, Seth, did you get my voicemail? I said, I did. He said, you didn't call me back. No, I didn't. I said, I can't be there today, but I will be there tomorrow. And I had a loving brother who spoke into my life and said, Seth, I think you need a little bit of correction in this area. But clearly one of these, seeking advice versus accepting correction, one of them, let's be honest, stings just a little bit more than the other. The Hebrew word for correction and discipline is the word musar. It's the same word used in parallel verses talking about or referencing when parents are correcting their child, disciplining their child. And I think it's kind of fitting because correction and discipline kind of stings in life. And you probably can think back to a time in your childhood when your parents were maybe correcting you, maybe grounding you or even spanking you. And in that moment, it probably, well, stung. And maybe you were even just a little bit frustrated. But as time went on, hopefully as you matured, you realized, hey, this is coming out of love. They love me, and they want me to get on the right path. And so I think that's why Solomon says you need to learn to love discipline, learn to love correction. And it seems to me that that's probably three times harder than it is to accept or to seek out advice. So he talks about it three times as much. Can I speak just a little bit of truth into your life for a moment? If you will seek out advice, you will be less and less apt to find yourself down a path where you have to accept correction. The more you seek out advice in life, the less you will find yourself in a place where you have to accept correction. I mean, isn't that true? I mean, in life, if you're driving your car and you make a wrong turn or something, I mean, you make a U-turn. You have to backtrack a little bit, maybe a few minutes or something, right? Unless, of course, you're driving down I-70 eastbound and you miss a turnoff for Horizon. And then it's probably going to cost you about 22 minutes to go all the way to Clifton and then make it back. I mean, don't tell me how I know that, but it wasn't me, I'll tell you that. You guys are smart folks. But if you're driving your car and you make a wrong turn, it costs you a couple minutes or so. In life, if you make a wrong turn, it can cost you days, weeks, months, years, seasons, decades, even entire lifetimes at some point. And nobody wants to wake up in their 50s and realize, I should have made some different decisions in my 30s. Nobody wants to get to the end of a marriage and think, I wish I would have had more counsel in my life. Nobody wants to launch kids into the world and then think, gosh, I wish we would have gotten more advice. And whether it's spiritually or morally, you don't want to find yourself down a path and realize how far from God you've been for so long. And we've kind of joked and chuckled a little bit this morning, but it's not funny when your life is in a shambles. It's not funny when your marriage is broken. It's not funny when you are living life so far from God. None of these things are funny. And yet it's never too late. It's never too late to step back on the right path. Here's the takeaway for this week. Who do you need? Whose advice do you need to seek? Or whose correction do you need to accept? Some of you, you need to seek some advice right now. The area that I asked you earlier to kind of lodge in your mind, and as you've maybe been thinking about that this morning, right now, you know, I could really use some advice in that area of my life. And maybe even before you leave here this morning, you need to catch somebody and say, hey, can we get coffee this week or lunch this week? Or maybe you need to make a phone call to somebody that's not here and just say, hey, could I get together with you and get some advice, some input from you in this area of my life? Some of you, you don't need advice because you've already been given correction. And it's been by someone who loves you, who cares about you, a godly, experienced person. Maybe it was a parent who's been telling you something, or a good friend or a coworker, or maybe it was even a spouse. I mean, for me, some of the best correction in certain elements of my life comes from my loving wife. Even in the last couple weeks, she's like, hey, I think you ought to rethink that decision just a little bit before you act on that. And it's counsel that probably only she knew about and could give me advice. Whatever it may be, maybe it happened years ago, and it created a little bit of distance between you and this individual, and you kind of pushed it off. You didn't want to hear it then. But thinking back on it, maybe it was good advice. It stung, but maybe it was good advice. And so maybe you need to catch somebody or pick up the phone or say, hey, could we get together? You know, you were right. I didn't want to hear it at the time, but you were right. And can you help me in this area? So here's the question. Are you on the right path? How can you know if you're headed in the right direction? Wisdom says that if you will seek advice and accept correction, you will be well on your way, headed in the direction that leads to life and life to the full. Let's pray.